nindantam pulakot koreena vikasam nipa prasunachchevim prodrikritva bujadvayam hari hari etutai vidantam muhu nrittantam dutam asunirjara chaye sinchantam urvitalam gayantam nijaparasadai parivritam sigaurachandram nama anandalilamaya vigrahaya Himava divyachchavi sundaraya tasmai maha prema rasa pradaya chaitanya chandraya namo namaste. Yes, Prabhu, is there some question? Yeah.
Today we have a question from our friend Sergei. He's here with us. So the question is, how to cultivate sincerity and how do I know whether I do something with sincerity or not?
It's a good question. But even what's implied in the question is that you could be, in the general sense of term, sincere about the wrong thing. Right? So that in the sense of earnestness, right? All these things need to be defined. But I want to make a particular point in defining sincerity. Because many people are very, for lack of a better word, earnest about something that may not necessarily, in the ultimate sense, be true. Right? That's why sometimes in their finer moments, enemies see themselves in one another. Right? They see a particular level of dedication to a cause, something along those lines. There's the legendary, loyalty of mafia members. So then the question comes to mind, its relation to truth and not in a secular sense. Right? But absolute truth, the ultimate reality. So Srila Guru Maharaj, it comes to my mind that once he said, he defined sincerity as appreciation for the truth. And again, just to underscore this point, we're not talking about relative truth. Of this dreamlike existence that we're dreaming our way through, and that's irrelevant. In this conversation. But it's defined as appreciation for the truth, and that means the absolute truth. Divinity, the infinite, God. Otherwise, we can say, Satan has many sincere followers, right, who are very dedicated in their work. So appreciation for the truth, but then we'll have to ask ourselves, what is the truth and how can the truth be known? So Srila Jiva Goswami, and it's echoed by Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamritam, says why we're not really poised to do that. Brahm Pramad Viparlipsa Karana Pratava. We have a tendency to be deluded, sensory inefficiency, our senses are imperfect, and in that you can include the mind. We have a cheating tendency, misrepresentation. And what? Commit mistakes, to err is human. So He's saying as a baseline, this is our default position. Or maybe even just take out the D. And, you know, this is what the fault is. So how is a person with imperfect senses, that to err is human, cheating propensity, deluded, going to establish what is true? Right? Beyond some relative sense of truth that is gathered by being born at a particular place, time, country, gender, circumstance, conventional understanding. We already know that in this world, when I say to the victors go the spoils, the victors write history, right, and say how something was or not, what happened or what didn't happen, and for why and what reason. And so it'll be best for us not to concern ourselves too much with that. Right? Have to deal with it in relative context, but at a minimum. And what will be our basic understanding? That if I am sincere to know the truth, and here the truth we're saying is synonymous with divinity, right? That's the only truth that counts ultimately. Right? So if I am sincere to make a connection with the infinite, with divinity, with God, that he will reciprocate that. That basic faith has to be there. When Srila Guru Maharaj was preaching, and a man came up to him and challenged him, saying or asserting this premise that if the finite can know the infinite, is not infinite. And there's some truth in that statement, half truth, because we just said this finite with imperfect senses, deluded, etc. How is that finite going to know the infinite? So he's saying, whatever it is, it's just superior to another finite's perspective, right? That's all, and it's called the advancement of civilization or progress. Right? To improve upon what was faulty to begin with, a new perspective. Right? And to support that side, we could say Srila Rupa Goswami, no less than, as Atak Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavyed Grahyam Indriye, that the infinite lies beyond the grasp of our mind and senses. Atak Sri Krishna, and here equated with Krishna, Nam Lila Guna Rupa. Beyond the grasp of the senses and the mind. And that's what we're out for. So a fool's errand, a wild goose chase, or the impossible of impossible things, then how is that going to play out? It says, Sevan mukhe hijivaro shayam eva spuratira. Saying, but if you can touch the heart of the truth is not heartless. It is not some neutral fact like of this world, just the facts, right? Or the numbers don't lie kind of thing. No, the truth has heart. The truth is a person. If you can somehow touch the heart of that person, the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is not heartless, who is not insensitive, with your sincerity to know, to establish a connection with, then he will reciprocate that. That's the most basic principle of faith there is. So Guru Maharaj answered that man by saying, if the infinite cannot make himself known to the finite, he's not infinite. And therein lies our hope and our prospect. From the other side, we have to be candid and honest about our own position and our own limitations. Let's just call them limitations instead of faults. Right? Limitations. It's a wise thing to acknowledge one's limitations in many instances. Right? So acknowledging those limitations, let me say, and we want to find out about the unlimited. So we're at a disadvantage in the beginning. And the solution is not to gather many limited people together. That will expand our version of the limited, but it still won't inform us properly about the unlimited that lies beyond our grasp of our mind, our intellect, our senses. That much humility someone has to have. Right? People, the whole thing, it's a ruse. All this atheism and arguments, and it just comes down to one point. The refusal to bow down to someone as greater than yourself. That's what it's about. Not only bow down metaphorically, but to bow down literally, to get on your hands and knees, cry and wail, oh my God, what have I done? That's what it comes down to. Not, you know, well, scientists have said. No, this they can't, I'm saying, this is what they cannot do. These great scientists, thinkers, intellectual giants cannot get on their hands and knees and bow down to God. And by that, I mean, we could say, you know, in their moments of humility, their insight is something like, there's something so great, but they would be embarrassed to be caught using the word God, right? So they can talk about the universe or something, you know, something like that that sounds a little more credible in the scientific world. Or to speak of God in an impersonal sense. And it's like, so great, so vast, so, you know, that, and to the point where nothing more can be said about that. But that which is so great, so vast, etc., does not possess the ability to express itself or make itself known is indirectly an insult. Right? So Guru Maharaj said, if the infinite cannot make itself known to the finite, then it's not infinite. And that's the baseline of theistic culture, is acknowledging that principle. It doesn't mean that someone has to be fully enlightened about it, but to acknowledge that principle. That's why I say faith. Faith that if I'm sincere to know God, he will reveal himself to me. If I am sincere to meet God, he will reveal himself to me. And that's a very powerful thing. Right? And does not go unanswered. Is not insensitive, heartless. Right? But that is something from the heart, some heartfelt aspiration or appreciation can draw the attention of the infinite, then such a powerful thing it is. Right? So many times I have said about the absolute revealing himself in relative circumstance. And what that means is, because people will think, like, who am I? Right? If I hear what you're saying, I'm an insignificant person among innumerable living beings. What interest could the Absolute have in me or my relative circumstance? We're told Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Wandering the length and breadth of the universe, which is what? The world of misconception. Right? Don't be deceived by what it appears to be objectively. What is the subjective that it is, the objective is resting upon? Is misconception. So we know how to map it, a stellar map or otherwise. But actually, what we need to understand is just varieties and levels of misconception. From very gross levels of misconception to very subtle levels of misconception, but taken as a whole, the world of misconception. Right. So it's saying, having wandered the length and breadth of this, that means having tried more or less everything, substituted anything and everything for Krishna, right, for divinity. Right. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji, but it said certain souls, fortunate, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, that Krishna sends his agent to them, Guru, and Guru, by their combined mercy, gives them the seed of what? Appreciation. Let's call it that in this context. The seed of appreciation. Something is there and it is seeded in the heart. If the heart has no capacity to grow this seed, then this whole transaction would be useless and something foreign. Affection for divinity would be something foreign to the innate nature of the soul. So we can say plants the seed, or we can say seeds in the sense as a verb, seeds Krishna conception proper. So we have some general sense, some appreciation in the general sense, and then what happens coming in connection with the agent and divine agency, sadhu, shastra, guru, Vaishnav, right? The scriptures and the interpreter of scriptures, it starts clarifying, becoming more clear to us, and starts resonating more in the deep heart's core, which is our actual, the residence of the soul. The deep heart's core begins to resonate with what is heard, right? Through the medium of hearing. Pravishta karna randrena swanam bhavam saro ruham dunoti shamalam krishna shalayasya yatasharat. The example is given in the Bhagavatam that like Guru, it's like the, how you could say, the ear is a channel to the heart, what is heard. So hearing from divine agents, divine agency, right? Scripture and the interpreters of scripture, that sound conception enters the heart, the deep heart's core. And through repeated hearing and a mood of service and faithful reception and reproduction, it begins to grow into something visible, tangible, palpable. But all along, the principle is appreciation for the truth. And the truth is not something abstract. The truth is a person. Right? It's not like there's this person, divinity, and then there's this thing called truth that's like in a book somewhere or being calculated by a computer as we speak. That's just data or information. The truth is a person. The Supreme Person is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right? So then sincerity means appreciation for divinity, to be more specific, and to be even more specific, to Krishna. Because if we say, all right, divinity in the general sense, that's a good thing. There are many different levels of appreciation for divinity. That's fine. The different religions of the world, different levels of theistic culture, all good, you know, without getting into the details. But in principle, but then if we follow that thread, as it gets more and more specific, right, because we're saying appreciation, when you have appreciation for a person, how is that expressed? And how are they the object of that appreciation? Right, so we hear so often people invoke the expression love of God or love for God. But what does that mean if we get more specific about it? As Guru Maharaj would invoke this saying at various times, as connotation increases, denotation decreases. And what that means, connotation, as we get more specific about what is meant by all these words that we use and say, then what it denotes or indicates becomes more specific. That's, so we say, love of God. That's a nice thing, you know, I love my fellow man, you know, like, that's all, who's gonna argue against that? But as we increase the connotation of what that could mean, then it becomes more specific. Right. So, we are sensual beings. Right. We can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, feel. These things come naturally to us. They cannot be separated from us. They're so intrinsic to our existence. Like when we see Ketu, the dog, he's just so under the influence of the sense of smell, it's astonishing. That is the key sense for him, is smelling. And you could try to have a conversation with him, then he'll get distracted by smelling. Right in the middle when you're saying something important. Just smells something. It's got to go, cannot resist. He must find out what that smell is. So he's like hardwired for smelling. That's the overwhelming sense for him. That's how they process information. Just the way some instrument needs to read something, you know. They're all, but for dogs, it's smell. Right. And we have all these different senses, but what's interesting, for us, the most important thing is we go to the seat of the mind, which is the seat of all sense experience, but finer that in the intellect. But when we get to the soul plane, where the senses originate, the soul is not senseless, but full of sense capacity, right? Sensuous in that sense, not in a limited sense of the word, right? But what it wants to target the senses toward is the ultimate object of love and affection, right? So the truth must be able to reciprocate all of these things. If it was something abstract, then it would lack the ability to reciprocate sensual aspiration. You understand? We're the full package. Seeing, hearing, taste. We're not here to sacrifice all those things to merge into a light bulb. Right? When people think about light, they think it like this. How could the spiritually conscious world be like LED or an incandescent? Some say, no, like incandescent bulb, where there's more halo. It's so silly. I mean, if it wasn't sad and pathetic. And you hear people talking about spiritual light, they think it means like light, like this, instead of, jyotirupam, the world where even light has form, where everything has form, where everything is personal. There is nothing that is impersonal. Only from a distance could it even appear to be impersonal, but not. Right? So I've mentioned that William Blake, the English mystic and poet, one of his famous sayings is, when the doors of perception are cleansed, we will see everything as it is, infinite. Right? And when people connect with that, they have a wow moment. And like, wow, that's really profound. It is. But what's more profound are the implications. Because just taking that simple statement, the doors of perception are cleansed. So what he means, what is conventionally understood, I know there's someone, an academic somewhere who will disagree with me, but there should be a chyron, in the bottom of the screen of whatever I'm saying, that I'm repurposing everything for my own purposes, which are hopefully higher than my own. So I'm my poetic license, and I can tell you, I have a poetic, I just don't have it on me right now. But on my poetic license, I can repurpose all of these things according to my own perception. It's kind of a deconstructionist thing, if that makes people more comfortable. But I don't think he would disagree with me. It's commonly understood when he says the doors of perception are cleansed. He was talking about the senses, right? That we're safe to assume. So, but let's just slow down for a second and list them. I already did. Seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. So there are these five senses, five doors here of perception. And we'll see everything as it is, infinite. So people, they immediately jump, because of how we've been conditioned, we immediately jump to some abstract conclusion about it. But what I'm suggesting is that taking it that what he says is valid and some profound insight that he had, I'm not mocking that. I just want to dive deep into reality, because that's the name of the show. So to dive, if what he's saying is part of, is real, it's reality, and I think it is, then there should be a correspond, there should be an infinite to be seen, an infinite to be heard, an infinite in terms of aroma, an infinite that you can touch, feel, that you can taste. Is there an infinite you can taste? He seems to be saying that. He's saying, if the doors of perception are cleansed, all your senses are cleansed of what? I think Guru Maharaj gives the answer to that. Acquired prejudice, acquired tendency. Right? Sangskar, or the lack of it. Right? Which actually means mental impressions. Like a palimpsest. You know what a palimpsest? I know you do. What's it in Russian?
But still, it is difficult to explain. Pentimento, when it is...
You paint on a canvas, but then someone paints another picture on that, another picture. So you have like multiple layers of paintings on one canvas. So in this context, the mind is that canvas, and then so many mental impressions, one upon another, upon another, upon another. Right? So he's saying, when we're cleansed of that, all these acquired mental impressions, acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, then we'll see everything as it is, infinite. Well, that's just see. Then we should hear everything as it is infinite, taste everything as it is infinite, smell everything as in it, and touch infinite. Every aspect of, and where is that expressed in any refined way, in any like detailed way, specific way, but in Krishna conception. So much so that one of his names, which I like a lot lately, these different names come at different times to you. Right, but this one is Hrishikesh. Govinda, but Govinda, we hear so much that we might drone on it. Right? But it's similar, because Govinda means he is also fulfilling all the senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. But Hrishikesh is spelling it out more. Govinda, is that would be a more interpretive sort of thing. Hrishikesh is just in your face about it, so to speak. Because Hrishika means senses. Hrishika Isha. Go also means senses. I'll never forget a lecture Prabhupada was giving. And he was so within the Sanskrit world, and he's trying to explain to the devotees about Goswami and these words and like Govinda thing, and he said, Go means indriyas. Like, oh, okay. But he forgot, we don't know what indriyas means either. It also means senses. But the way Prabhupada said, Go means indriyas. Like, oh, okay. So, and why they're used, I mean, if we follow this, we will see a very beautiful connection between Hrishikesh and Govinda. But that Hrishika is used, and it's also parallel to Rupa Goswami's sloka, who knows everything there is to know about Govinda. So in his sloka, when he says, Anya abhilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam, there it is again. What are these layers? What are those coverings? Gyan, karma, knowledge, and what we're doing. Right? Layers. We get lost in what we're doing and think that by knowing, we'll figure it out and everything will be okay. Rather, you say, no, these acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, jnana, karma, jnanavritam, those coverings have to be removed to have a glimpse of the substance of it. Jnana kamar dinamitam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam. Often devotees think who understand something about anushilana or krishnanu shilana means what's favorable to Krishna culture. We think it's like what we like to do that's within the parameters of Krishna consciousness. But what we're being told is, you know, he has things that he likes. And it would really be in our interest to find out what those things are, right? If we want to make progress in Krishna culture. One famous Bhagavatam sloka that you could interpret for months if you had the capacity to do so. But we're told the expert, Srila Gurudev, he's saying, in Martyo Yada Trakta Samasta Karma Nivedita Atma Bhagavan, I forget the rest, but anyway, it's like Big substantial sloka from the Bhagavatam, Gurudeva. You know what it means? I'm like, what? And he said, give Krishna what he wants. That's what it's saying. But it's going on and on and on, and this, and then so many. And he said, it's telling you, give Krishna what he wants. Krishnanushilana means to give Krishna what he wants. And you think, like, oh, I should find out what that is. Yes, we should, and through Sadhu Shastra and Guru, we will. But long story short, what he wants is something from you that only you can give, which is your deep heart's core, that's what he wants. He'll accept a leaf, a flower, fruit, water, or this or that, when it has a touch of that heart. Otherwise, why would he be interested in those things? As I mentioned before, why would Vamandeva want a universe when in another aspect, he's got universes coming out of the pores of his body, innumerable universes coming out of his pores in another form. So he's come to reclaim one of them. He's putting his foot down in this pastime. Gonna show them who's boss. Some kind of ego assertion. No, it's all a ruse to get the heart of Bali Maharaj, his love and affection, his devotion. And it's a beautiful pastime and deceptively simple. But what he wants is the heart of Bali Maharaj. Bhavagrahi Janardana means that Krishna's a bhav eater, a bhav consumer. Bhav, in this context, means heart. That's what he finds irresistible. And what Rupa Goswami is telling us about devotion is that it's so amazing and astonishing that it can attract Krishna. That's the impossible of impossible things. We say, these tiny, finite jiva souls, right? If in the heart of a tiny, finite jiva soul can be a trace amount of appreciation, love, and affection for Krishna, that catches his attention. That catches the attention of the infinite. And Rupa Goswami says, that seed that was planted, it sprouts, and at a particular point, like a flower, it blossoms, and it has some unique, peculiar aroma that Krishna finds enchanting. So that the finite can enchant the infinite? How is that possible? We're told, through love and affection. And that's the unique contribution that you can make or have. Otherwise, it would all be redundant. You understand? Innumerable living beings, and another one just became liberated, and, you know, it wouldn't add anything. It wouldn't be an increase. But if you have something that is unique to you, and even we will say it's not of the quality of the super servitors, etc., but under their influence, they develop some flower like devotee, and something original comes from their hearts. It's actually an increase for the infinite who's already unlimited, and therefore it's enchanting. So I mention that because, the parallel sloka to Rupa Goswami. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tatparatena nirmalam. Upadhi, various meanings, but here I like to define it as substitute. Saying when you've given up substituting things, persons, places, things, for Krishna, you've exhausted everything. That's the Brahman, the Brahmite, revisited. tat paratena nirmalam nirmal hrishikesa sevanam bhakti rucite. There's that word, hrishikesh. He's saying that when you, these senses that we're using for anything and everything other than service to Krishna, substitutes, when you start using them for Krishna, giving Krishna what he wants with your seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, etc., then that's devotion. And it is exciting for us to know this possibility. And it's not just a possibility, it's the actuality and the fact. Otherwise, we can be left with some understanding like, so you have these senses, you can use them for sense gratification or try and dovetail them in the service of Krishna, like that. But what if they're actually only really, truly meant for this? And not in a sense of like forced labor. Service is not forced labor. But if what you're actually searching for, right, the most beautiful to see, to hear, to taste, to touch, to smell, the epitome, and say, Hrishikesha, Hrishika Isha, the Lord of the senses, but in sense, the epitome of what it is the senses are seeking. And that's where Hrishikesh overlaps with Govinda. So I like to say, reference the Dwaraka queen Rukmini, because she wrote this letter once to Krishna that's so beautiful and revealing. And what it was is the opposite of a ransom note. Because right? Normally, when somebody's being kidnapped, the kidnappers send a ransom note to the, you know, the husband, the wife, the family. Right? And if you don't do this by this time, you know. But she wrote the opposite of a ransom note. She sent a note to Krishna saying, kidnap me. That's very different. I don't know of any other instances like that. And what she says is that it's in perhaps five beautiful slokas, but one is overwhelmingly enchanting. Srutva gunan bhuvana sundara srinvatam te nirvishya karna vivare haratonga tapam rupam drisham drishimatam akilartalabam twayachita. Achyuta, twayachita, apatrapamme, visati chitram apatrapamme. Here she's addressing as Achyuta, but she's saying, Srut vagunan bhuvana sundara sranvatante. And here she's telling us how this all happens. And it's consistent with what I've said up to this point. He says, hearing about you, just for the sake of those who know something of the story, she had not met Krishna at this point, technically. Right? So she's saying, Srutva gunan bhuvana sundara sranvatam. Hearing about you, through the process of hearing, I could understand you're the most beautiful thing in the world. And that's just as a matter of speech, because obviously Krishna's beyond this world for those who are stickler to details. But it's a matter of speech. Say, I could understand by hearing about you. So as we told before, nama, rupa, guna, lila, from nama, from hearing sound, rupa came to me. Perception of your form. And then I could, you're incomparably beautiful. Like Swarupam Bibhranam Jagatatulyam. But then she says something else that's very like noteworthy. Srutvagunan Bhuvanasundara Srinvatam Te. She says, then I understood why there is such a thing as hearing. Why we have the auditory sense. So it's almost in a sense of discovery. She's saying, by hearing about you, then I could see your divine form and you're the most beautiful thing in the world. And then I understood why there is hearing. It, in this sense, it's not an option. We're exercising a deluded, dreamlike option. One day we will awake from this dream and shake it off, hopefully. But until that time comes, the doors of perception are not cleansed. Ask William Blake. And she's saying, so when I heard about you and then I could see your divine form come out of that sound, then I understood hearing, it's meant to hear about you. That's what makes the heart happy and dance. That's why the auditory sense exists, is to hear about hear the most ideal sound. The most beautiful sound, the most ideal. Srutvagunan bhuvanasundara srinvatami nirvishakarna vivare haratonga tapam. And then she said, then I noticed like everything that's been giving me pain vanished. It's like I have this condition, and I told the doctor, when I ride the bicycle, I don't feel the pain. See, he said, yes, because the riding the bicycle is sending endorphins to your brain and taking your mind off the pain. He said, it's still there, but you're not thinking about it. It's something like that, but infinitely better. So he's saying, I heard about you, and when I'm hearing about you, like the pain that one could experience that is otherwise known as existence, for most people, didn't seem to bother me so much. I wasn't feeling it. And he said, no, because the Krishna endorphins were going into your brain and your soul and everywhere and making you feel so good, you forgot about the trials and tribulations and the pains of material existence. And I'm saying, like, then give me more. Give me more Krishna. So, haratanga tapam. Then, rupam dusham dushimatam akilarta labam. And seeing you, and again, we have to remind you, she hasn't seen him yet. So this underscores that through from sound you see Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, you see Krishna. Actually, no reasonable devotee in this plane will say that they have seen Krishna. Right? But that would, to a certain degree, be untrue, because having heard from genuine Vaishnavas, authentic scriptures, etc., the beginnings of the seeing of Krishna conception has entered the heart. But they will write. But they should rightfully say, "I've not seen Krishna." As Guru Maharaj once said, when some, he said, "I don't have the audacity to say that I've seen Krishna." He said, "But what I will say." As I've heard from the saints and the scriptures, that there are certain signs you will see on the way to Krishna, and I'm seeing those signs and indications. That much I will say. I'm just repeating what he said. But we've heard about Krishna. You've heard about Krishna. Some impression has come to the heart. Right? So she is telling us, and we can understand in her case, the exalted super servitor, the queen, Rukmini. Then in her all of her doors of perception are totally cleansed, I assure you. And so Shuddha Nam, pure Krishna Nam, hearing Krishna's name, purely hearing about Krishna, then the divine form of Krishna manifests in the heart, in the deep heart's core. And she's saying, and now seeing you, Akhilarta Labham, it's like the so-called Samadhi Sloka of the Bhagavad Gita. What does it say? Yam labdva chapram labham manyate nadikam tataha. When you come in connection with this, and again, it's not something abstract but personal, you'll think there's nothing greater to be gained. So she's saying, now seeing you, atao, I've got that feeling. And not only that, now I realize what my eyes are for, right? Just like in the secular love songs of this world, they're always expressing something like that, right? And we say, oh, it's a nice love song, or it's a little silly, or it's someone in the throes of romantic love, or... But there's a sign, and then you're supposed to grow out of that or wink to someone, you know, that's just in a song or in a book or in a movie, but real life isn't like that. But somewhere deep in the heart's core, we know that that's what we want. And that's what we've always wanted. And we won't be satisfied with anything less than that. And for all this worldly experience and grow up and be an adult and all that, still somewhere deep in the heart's core, we know that's what we want. And that's why it's the subject matter since the beginning of time, from romantic literature, romantic songs, this type of exclusive absorption to and wholly giving oneself over to the other and saying, the whole reason for my existence is you. That's what we want. And we're, exploring the option of being exploiting agents, thinking that by acquiring, controlling, and consuming what is lower than us, that that will somehow give us fulfillment and satisfaction. And it hasn't yet. And I have like my email and it's all on, and no one has texted me yet that they've achieved that since the beginning of time. And it's always 2 inches too short. It falls short of that because it's not real. And we're real subjects in a dreamlike world, and it's only through sounds that we can become awakened and come out of this state. She says, Rupam Disham Dishimatam Akilarta Labam Twayachita Apati Vishati Chitram Apatrapam Me. She says, so I'm shamelessly asking you to kidnap me. That I like that prayer. And because it factors in karmic circumstance, which is our doing, what we've generated, and saying, but for you, I don't see any way out of this situation. That's a nice prayer. And saying, and although I don't deserve it, I'm shamelessly begging you to rescue me from these karmic circumstances that I've generated in forgetfulness of you. That is a sincere prayer because it's based upon appreciation for the truth, the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna, Govinda, Rishikesh. Anything else?
Not for today.
All right. Hare Krishna.